Good evening. James McKenna here with my Science Hour for May 17th, 2018. And I'm have a bit of a frog in my somewhere in my head throughout here, so hope it isn't too bad to listen to. Anyway, tonight some interesting topics. My main science topic, I think, is very interesting. I'm going to be talking about the Van Allen belts, some specifics, and exposing some rather strange reporting that just came out. Of course, Van Allen belts many times in the news. But, of course, whenever they're mentioned, it comes back to the Apollo astronauts going through. And I'm not bringing this up. It was in space.com that brought it up. And so I'll read you the piece out of their article, and then I'll expose their baloney, and you'll be able to see right away that they're grabbing for straws, let's just put it that way. But then I'll talk about the Van Allen belts and a very interesting aspect of them. What happens to the Van Allen belt when a plasma discharge comet passes by? What happens to the Van Allen belts? And, in fact, some of the other electrical phenomena that go on around our planet out here in this solar system on the very outward fringes of the galaxy, which is a galaxy in a sea of billions of galaxies that seems to have no end. So that'll be my main science topic, dealing with what happens with the Van Allen belts when a large passing comet comes back by and electrically interacts with it. But first of all, a couple comments here that shadow diplomacy. Now, this is important, and this is not from a political point of view or anything like that. It's just simply a reality that it more than appears, it finally came out and is reality. I was actually going to comment on this before, but now that John Kerry has stuck his big nose into the political arena, he's not in government. The idea that he was a Secretary of State and he's just going around just keeping up with all his old contacts is incredibly ludicrous. He's not in government. His party and whatever is no longer in government. And he's not on the payroll. He has no official role. He's not been asked to do anything. And it turns out he's running around to foreign governments telling them, don't listen to this Trump guy. He's not going to be there very long. We'll be back in power. We'll be running the show soon. So just hold on a little bit and we'll be back in power. And so therefore, don't worry about this Iran deal. Well, it turns out that a lot of people got paid big-time money from Iran. Because, look, anytime you have a big payout, like Obama, released assets that had been held, but then also threw in a couple $100 billion in cash to them, and anytime money exchanges hands like that, you know that there's people in the pile there getting their piece of the pie. That's just the way it works. I mean, don't tell me it doesn't, because that's the way it works. Everybody's palm gets greased. And so John Kerry and all these other people, well, now that Trump is throwing out the deal, whenever it's a typical bad drug deal with the CIA or the deep state, whenever a deal goes bad, well, then Iran's going to say, well, we paid you guys all this money to make this deal, and now it ain't there anymore. So, you know, give us our money back or, you know, whatever. It's a bad, bad drug deal is what it is. It's illegal kickbacks. And so now they're trying to run around and patch this up and say, oh, never mind that Trump guy over there. But anyway, that's one issue. But the whole issue of shadow diplomacy, how many more people are running around in North Korea? We know Obama was there. How many other people are trying to muck up the works when Trump is on the verge of historical agreements? And let me just stop for a minute. My degree is in nuclear physics, so it's something I happen to know a lot about. I also know about the international politics, and in Iran's favor, they had a peaceful program to build nuclear power reactors. And they for sale, and they would have competing against General Electric, a giant American-based corporation. And, of course, Iran would be able to build nuclear reactors for electricity much cheaper than General Electric. So it provides competition. But anyway, the issue is that you can also use the same reactors to build up the nuclear fuel for nuclear bombs. And let me just say this, simply from a physics point of view. It is relatively easy. It's not rocket science, as they say, an expression. It's not rocket science to build a nuclear bomb. It is fairly well understood. And given enough time and resources, pretty much any developed country, if they concentrated their engineering, their effort, their national effort, etc., into doing this, they could in fact build a nuclear bomb. The thing that's missing, and all of this talent would go to waste, if you did not have uranium, which is the source, in other words, the yellow cake, which is the first concentrated form of uranium the way it's shipped around, and you would need train loads of it to concentrate it down to the point where you have bomb fuel for experimentation, for making bombs, and then having reserves. So we're talking about an immense amount of uranium powder. And if you don't have that, all of your other technology doesn't do you any good because you can't make a bomb without the nuclear basic raw material, the raw uranium. And so that is what the Clintons did when they, Secretary of State Clinton, signed off on the deal to give 20% of the uranium to Russia through the Uranium One deal in Canada to Putin, and then that uranium went to Iran. So our uranium reserves went through the back door to Iran and gave them all the money necessary and gave them the nuclear deal in which basically we had no ability to see what they were doing. And Putin says, for example, Iran has a perfect right to develop nuclear power. Well, I guess you could say that about anybody. You could say that about a little Johnny down the block. Why can't Johnny have his nuclear bomb? Mom, gee, Johnny's a nice kid. You know, there's no reason why little Johnny shouldn't have the materials to build a nuclear bomb, right? No, not really. The problem is proliferation is the problem, because once it gets in the hands of Iran, then it gets into other people's hands. It's like a secret. It's like a secret. You tell somebody and you tell them, don't tell the secret. And they go, okay, I'll never tell that secret. And the next thing you know, everybody's coming back to you and telling you your secret. And you said, hey, I told you not to tell the secret. And they said, well, you know, that was yesterday. Today's a different day. And that's what happens with nuclear weapons. So it's not only Iran, it's who else that they would give them to who are not exactly good friends with the United States or our allies or you. It's getting dangerous enough to travel in foreign countries. So anyway, onwards with this topic. So shadow diplomacy, trying to save this because they made a bad deal. Not only a bad deal, but they took money, they took bribes to do this. And now the country that's paid them the bribes is saying, hey, we paid you a lot of money to this deal, and now the deal ain't there anymore. That's what you call in politics a bad drug deal. And it's, you know, that's when the revolvers come out and the people get shot. And so Kerry is running around, John Kerry is running around trying to save this deal for all the people that got paid off. I can only imagine the Clintons and the Bushes and the, John Kerry and the deep state, all these people getting paid off. Probably lots of people got paid off under the table. And now Iran is mad because now they're dealing with a new president who's cutting down the deal. So shadow diplomacy is really, you know, and you can see it going on in North Korea. Somebody over there telling, hey, don't deal with this Trump guy. We can catch you a better deal. We'll do something, you know, and then trying to tell them that, hey, Trump ain't going to be in office much longer. So you've got some really shady, underhanded things going on in the international world, which is very dangerous. It's very dangerous. And no matter who is in office or whatever, and by the way, I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm a Trump supporter. Trump is not a Republican. Let's just put it that way. He's a person that I don't agree with everything he does, but he's changing, getting back to America first. And that's something that you haven't heard in a long time, and it's something that's very necessary. And this Iran deal is a perfect example where basically, or the Paris Climate Accord was a terrible deal for the United States. It had nothing to do with climate control or pollution or anything else. It had nothing to do with it. It was simply a way to extract money from you in the United States and send it to China and India in vast amounts. So that also the any time money changes hands like that, it's going to be flowing through the pockets of some of these people that cut these deals. Okay, so anyway, shadow diplomacy, very dangerous. And along with this is the issue of YouTube. Now, this is a problem. Let's just step back a little bit and look at the media, what we call the media in the United States. These are privately owned entities that have agendas. And if you claim to be a news reporting agency, looking at CNN when Ted Turner first started it back in the early 1990s, and the Gulf War was going on, the first Gulf War under Bush Sr., and CNN was over there just reporting. So many Scuds went over, so many anti-ballistic missiles came back, they didn't work. They were talking about troop movements. They were there on the scene. That was news reporting. They were simply reporting the news, and both George Bush Sr. and Saddam Hussein were getting their news from CNN, oddly enough. They had better intel than the CIA and the U.S. military combined. They had better on-site reporting. That was news journalism. And that all changed when the CIA bought CNN. And it's been a candy nugget news ever since, fabricated news. And so in that, the CIA learned that, hey, we have to own the news media. So they went out and with their ill-gotten drug money, bought up not only the news media, but every form of what we call remote sensing. In other words, listening devices, drones that can fly around and track people 24/7. You get in your car, you drive around, they know where you were, and they track you on Facebook and YouTube and Twitter. And all of these various methods of tracking people, that's what the CIA does with this vast database on every move you make. If you went and bought a candy bar, they know it, and it's in your database. You went over, and at 2 p.m. yesterday, you bought a candy bar. What does that mean? Well, it might not mean anything until it's time to trace where you have been. And imagine if you try and, you know, state that you were a criminal or something, whatever. But it's this constant, this is the deep state, Orwellian deep state. And YouTube is part of this. Now, the CIA bought Google. Google bought YouTube. So YouTube is owned by the CIA. And when you start to see the censorship that goes on in YouTube, and I'll just preface this by saying, I have never had a YouTube channel. I never will. I don't post on YouTube. My radio shows are not posted on YouTube. I'm a guest on certain shows where it's posted on YouTube. But there are people like a friend of mine, Professor Emeritus, University of Minnesota, retired Marine Corps Drill Sergeant Jim Fetzer, who's been completely eliminated from YouTube, from any YouTubes, and anybody that talks to him is eliminated from YouTube. Well, I don't mind talking about him. First of all, I don't shy away from talking about any topic that is real. I never have. But I don't have a YouTube channel for them to pull. Whatever. But I've been censored from YouTube for a lot longer than anybody else that you know, I guarantee you. If you look on YouTube, I always tell people, in fact, the other day on the Power Hour, I was guest with Daniel Brigman, and we got into this subject a little bit, and I said, don't get your science from YouTube. YouTube is the biggest disinformation cesspool about science. I said, if you want to learn how to fix your bicycle or your lawnmower, yeah, go to YouTube, because there's probably 20 videos on your brand of a weed whipper or lawnmower or bicycle or something like that, and they'll show you how to fix it. Little tricks, do this, and you know it'll work again. Yeah, that's great for YouTube, or it might be some other things, but it's full of outrageously crazy stuff, you know, and then it gets into the borderline wacko science stuff, or NASA, you know, posts on YouTube. They got all their YouTube little videos running around, you know, science at NASA, YouTube videos, etc. And then all of the fake science. There's just tons of it, plus volumes of people trying to copy my work and then spin it out as if they were some kind of experts, and they're not. They're just complete morons. But if you take a video that you might think is related to me, say they're talking about weather or something, or, you know, whatever, and you think, oh, the people that look at this would be interested in Jim McCanny's work. And so you take and you put a little comment in the comment section. You say, you know, people, if you like this, you should go listen to Jim McCanny's work. And here's his webpage, you know, et cetera. That comment that you put in there would be, they would have it stricken from the comment section within seconds. And people that have done this have found out very quickly that all of a sudden they're tracked. That somebody is going to follow their YouTube or Google searches, etc. And by the way, the Google searches, I don't even know why anybody even uses Google anymore. The searches are horrific. They don't give you any decent information, certainly not on a technical level. But back to YouTube. And I've even found this, that on YouTube, somebody will go and put in a comment favorable to James McCanny. If you want to find more, go listen to James McCanny, you know, Professor James, whatever. And then they email me and they say, oh, I put a comment on this YouTube video saying something favorable about you, James McCanny. And so I go there and look and I say, there's no comment there. And they go, well, yeah, I see it. I'm on my computer right now. And my comment is there. YouTube has the ability to selectively send to that guy, to his computer, his MAC address, his IP address, the information that it looks like his comment is still there. So he thinks it's still there, but nobody else that logs into that YouTube video will see it. And so I say, okay, we'll go to a different computer and log in, and lo and behold, they log in from a different computer, and the comment is not there. That's the level of sophistication they have. And I should mention, too, that this happened. You're probably all aware, and I post on my webpage that this is not me. This is not me talking. This is a cut-up job of my voice. But they went in. This started this particular video. It's not the only one. But this started around the 2012 craziness about the Mayan calendar, you know, end of the world baloney, and which I spent volumes of my time and airtime trying to dispel. But anyway, they took radio shows of mine from 2002 to 2004, clipped out pieces of my voice, glued them together, and made it sound like there was imminent destruction, that Nibiru in this mini solar system was coming in and everybody would die. And so anyway, and I would go to YouTube and I'd tell them to take it down and they wouldn't take it down. And I said, this is misinformation. They didn't care because they're part of the problem. They're part of the disinformation problem. Okay, so coming back to people like James Fetzer, who's been completely eliminated from there. Now, let's go a step above, and this is my point. If you look at shadow diplomacy, if you look at YouTube or Google, you have to look at who owns them and what's up above there and what the agendas are. So when James Fetzer is censored completely, or anybody that even talks to him, like Mike Adams, who is the health ranger guy, remember? Mike Adams, I think is his full name correct. I hope I got that right. I apologize if not. But had all of his YouTube channel taken off because he did one interview with James Fetzer. And so his whole YouTube channel was removed because of that. Well, first of all, I would never be on YouTube myself. Go find some other platform to be on. But you have to ask, what's the agenda here? Well, James Fetzer was working in too close to one of those topics that they just don't want you to know about. And that is that in Sandy Hook and in the Parkland shooting and in the Las Vegas shooting and in other shootings, what they're finding is that somebody up in the deep state is creating identities for little children, for adults, for teachers, making people up using actors and the people who become the spokesperson for the event afterwards were handpicked long before this. And so anyway, what he's getting close to is the fact that they're creating identities for children, for little kids. They're creating identities, and this is business as usual. And Fetzer is getting too close to this topic, which is a big one, and they don't want you, the public, to know about this. And so isn't it interesting that they say, well, these kids were cremated? Well, there's no evidence. There's no way to go back and find the evidence of being shot even. And so then you look into the coroner's reports or the death reports or Social Security records or insurance records or any other records that would have to exist when this volume of people got shot, and there are none. You know, so as they dig deeper into this, they keep coming up with empty hands as far as data that should be there relative to people that were killed at an event. And so this would necessarily trigger an investigation from the Department of Justice, which is non-existent. We don't have a Department of Justice. Of all of the things going down today, illegal immigration, whether you're for it or against it, whether, you know, gun control, whether you're for it or against it, the Department of Justice, these are federal level laws that are being affected here, and the Department of Justice is simply nowhere to be found. And so once again, that's the deep state, because they're following agendas that are way above what you see in the public. And this is my point, that when you see the news, when you see the fake news from MSNBC or CNN or 60 Minutes, the fake news, when you see that, there's an agenda that they're following that's way up here. Anderson Cooper, you know, the white-haired wonder of, excuse me, it just gets ludicrous. But my point is that this is all coming under high-level agendas. Number one, gun control is number one. And they do not want the American public to have arms, because they want to come in and shut down radio shows. They want to limit free speech. But they're going to have a real hard time when the American public has arms. It's just as simple as that. It's not about hunting. It's the deterrent. It's the idea that they really can't control the public. And it's all about control. But those are just issues. But the point is that the Department of Justice is nowhere to be found. So that leaves the states basically in a chaotic mode. California with its sanctuary city law. Now, one by one, all of the communities are voting against it. But look at the time and effort that's going into this. And as one councilman said in a San Diego town hall meeting where they voted to go against the sanctuary city provision of the state law of California, he said openly, he said, we wouldn't have to do this if there was a federal government. And he said, since nothing's going on at the federal government, they're forced to do this. So this is getting really ridiculous. But Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General of the United States, is simply a person that's not there. And someday he will be viewed as basically a traitor scumbag that did not serve his country. He's basically not doing anything. And apart from a Russian investigation or whatever is going on, there's all kinds of things going on in the country that are affected by federal statutes, and he's not doing anything with any of it. There's just like, it's not there. We don't have a Department of Justice. And if you look at the agencies, the Department of Justice was not an original part of the Constitution. It was created. Just like the FBI, the CIA, the EPA, you could just go right down NASA. NASA wasn't part of the original Constitution. Nowhere did George Washington say, hey, we're going to have a space program someday and NASA's going to be in charge of it. No. Anyway, I'm getting a little far afield here, but the point is when you see censorship at the level that's going on today, and private agencies like Facebook, now this is another issue, that you might say it's private, if they open up to the public and the same person who is being censored is potentially being used as advertised and monetary gain for that company, then, unless it's something unlawful, but if people are just bringing information to the table, there's no reason for censorship unless, as is the case, YouTube is controlled by the CIA and people like James Fetzer are getting too close to their dirty laundry. Let's just put it that way. So, and that's what's going on, and that's what happened with me. I was censored from YouTube long before anybody else even dreamed about being censored from YouTube. So I hit the funny bone, let's put it that way, of the people in power a long time ago with my work. And isn't it funny that all the people that copy me on YouTube, they can post there all day long, giving their imitation baloney, phony baloney, electric universe, phony baloney. And they can post there all day, all they want. But the second my name shows up, whammo, it disappears. And the person that put it there is probably going to be followed for a while. So I don't encourage people to go try this, but it's happened enough times and it happens consistently that, but what did I do? What did I do to trigger the ire of YouTube? Well, if you understand who YouTube is, they're just an information collecting agency of the CIA, and there's an agenda of information to promote. What did my message say? Well, it talked about real science, and the CIA does not want you, the public, to have real science. And so, when I get into my main science topic here in a minute, I'll be talking about the Van Allen belts. And like I say, I didn't bring this up. They talk about in the space.com article about Apollo astronauts just zipping through these like Johnny B. Goode coming back. No problem. And it's very funny to, I'll do some analysis on this. But anyway, my point here in going off on this initial tirade, using half of my show for it, is to say that there are, the deep state is very much alive and well. They are very busy, and they're trying to undermine as subtly as they can the rightful position of you, the American people, to self-government. That's simply the bottom line. And they want you stupid. They want you ignorant. They want you unarmed. They want you cowling to them, the big government, for all your needs. And that's why they love, I won't go into that other than to say they want the public, and Obama actually said this. He said, the people out there are too stupid to run their own lives. We have to do it for them. That's what Obama said. And that's their belief. They believe that you are so stupid you can't manage your own checkbook. They got to do it for you. Or your health care or whatever it was. Okay. So on to the main science topic. So the question is, what happens to the Van Allen belts when a comet comes by? Now, remember, this is not a dirty snowball comet, which is phony baloney, but this is the McCanny, the plasma discharge comet model, explaining that these are electrical phenomenon. And so what happens when a comet comes by? But first of all, I'm going to take you into this space.com article, which is discussing the Van Allen belts. And they're talking about new discoveries and et cetera, various aspects of the Van Allen belt. And then it says, I want to read this whole paragraph because I'm going to pick it apart. When you understand how ludicrous this is, you'll all be rolling on the floor laughing. And remember, this is space.com, which is supposed to be the ultimate in informative, you know, hard-hitting analysis. It says, the astronauts on the International Space Station do not regularly spend time inside the belts, the Van Allen belts. But from time to time, solar storms expand the belts to the orbit of the space station. In the 1960s, now this is the part I want you to listen to, it says, in the 1960s, several Apollo crews went through the Van Allen belts on their way to and from the moon. Their time in that radiation-intensive region, however, was very short, in part because the trajectory was designed to pass through the thinnest known parts. With more study, astronauts can be better protected for long-term stays in Earth orbit. Now, okay, let's flash back here, the 1969 era of Apollo astronauts, 1970s. Now, the Van Allen belts were discovered in 1958 with the Explorer satellite, and that was they're named after James Van Allen, the physicist, University of Iowa, who basically was the discoverer of the radiation belts. And what they are, they're high-energy electrons and protons that are in counter-rotating belts. And what happens with an electron in a magnetic field, its path bends in the form of a circle. So these are radiation, they call it, but really electrons and protons, usually at almost relativistic speeds, so they're very high energy, in orbit around Earth's, in trapped in Earth's magnetic field. That's what the Van Allen belts are. And there's the inner belt, and then there's an outer belt. And these are coupled with other magnet. Because their charges moving in a circle, they create a magnetic field. It's coupled with our geomagnetic field, and it's also coupled with larger scale magnetic fields that exist outside of the Van Allen belts. Okay. So anyway, imagine, I want you to imagine what it's like to pass through the Van Allen belts. And then I guarantee you, too, that these regions where there is spacing between the Van Allen belts I'll explain how this works, but that's not like there's some magical little gap that the Apollo astronauts knew to fly through to get to the moon. Their moon trajectory is based on the position of the moon, on orbital times of launch windows, etc., not anything related to the Van Allen belts. And so this is a story that's been padded on to the pile of baloney after the fact. In fact, in 1969, there was no concern about the Van Allen belts because they really didn't understand them. There was very little information. It's not like it's only in the last 5 years that NASA has had satellites in the Van Allen belts where they've been studying them. So 1968, they just knew that they were there. They didn't know anything about them, nor how strong they were or what the radiation effects were. The Apollo astronauts had a radiation badge which had alpha and beta particles, which were not related to X-rays. And the problem with the Van Allen belts, which I learned the hard way from the Russians, is that when the electrons or the protons hit metal, typically, they create X-rays. So the electrons, the relativistic electrons and protons, hit a metal in the spacecraft and they create X-rays and it becomes an X-ray chamber and that's where the damage is. But the Apollo astronauts didn't have X-ray badges. They didn't even know about it. They didn't know there was an X-ray danger in outer space. So you have 18 astronauts going through the Van Allen belts, allegedly coming back. Not a single one of them ever had a problem. They all lived to ripe old ages and never showed any signs of effects. So what's the problem now? Anyway, we could go on and on about that. But this idea that they magically had a little crack that they went through and that's why they didn't have any problems is ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. And because additionally, the Van Allen belts are constantly changing. They're getting bigger, they're shrinking, they're moving out farther. So there's not some magical point that you could go through and direct a spacecraft where, because today, where there's less electrons, it isn't going to be that place tomorrow or even in 2 hours. So how in 1969 did they somehow know this magical slot to go through? It's absurd. I mean, it is so ludicrous. Okay. But the other thing is, now imagine the Van Allen belts, and I'll have a picture posted on my webpage to show, give you an idea. But imagine, let's take a pillow that, you know, like your bedtime pillow. But the pillow is like 10 feet long. It's a 10-foot long pillow. And you take this pillow and you wrap it around, let's pretend your head is Earth. Okay, your head is Earth, your nose is the launch point from Cape Canaveral, and that's where the Saturn V rocket would go off from. So you wrap this pillow all the way around your head and bring it back together. So you have basically a big donut shape. And by the way, if you hear noise here, I'm not in my normal good studio this evening, so I have some extraneous noise going on here. So if you hear some noise in the background, I apologize. Okay, so that's the first ring of the Van Allen belts, is this kind of like ring around your face of this pillow, extended out not very far, actually, only about maybe a couple inches away from your face and your head. Okay, so maybe I said 10 feet long, maybe 5 feet long, and you wrap it around. Okay, that's the first layer. Now take a 10-foot long pillow and wrap it around that one. So you have two layers here. And now, your job, now imagine that the moon is out there, but the moon is out on the other side of these pillows. And you have to fly around these Van Allen belts to get out to the moon. Well, no, that's not the way it works. It's not the way launches work. So it's not like they had some magical path to get around the Van Allen belts, because you can't do it. You can't get to the moon. You cannot get to the moon without going through the Van Allen belts. This idea that there's a magical slot, and NASA knew about it in 1969, and they went that way, and there was no problem, is crap. Because if there were such a magical slot, well, why don't they just go there now? Why don't they go there now with the International Space Station or the Space Shuttle? And they could get through the magic slot and have no problems. Well, they've never done it. And that probably pretty much tells you anything. Okay, but this kind of gives you an idea of the shape and form of the Van Allen belts. Now, These are part of our magnetic field. So they are electrical in nature. And now a magnetic field is generated by the motion of charged particles. And so if you have, for example, an electric motor, you have, say, iron magnets in there or niobium magnets, whatever. And the reason they have a magnetic field is because in the atomic structure, the electrons are paired such that they contribute to an overall magnetic field. And in that solid, they add up and they're all pointed in the same direction. So ultimately, magnetic fields in a solid, like in your hand, a magnet in your hand, like a little magnet that you play with, or magnetite or anything like that, it's because of the iron or nickel or niobium or other material that has an inherent magnetic field. And because it's a solid, those magnetic fields are locked in there. And if you melt that material, then the magnetic fields go haywire. They are not aligned anymore. They can move around as they will. So to create a magnet, you have to take a magnetic type material like iron or nickelum or niobium or compounds that are made from these, and you have to create an external magnetic field and hold that external magnetic field as the solid, as the liquid becomes solid, and that's called the Curie temperature. The temperature at which a metal or a liquid that's a metal that's in liquid form, as it solidifies and goes below that temperature at which it locks in the magnetic field. And so if you have a very strong magnetic external magnetic field and you have your piece of iron in there, whatever, then you have a much stronger magnetic field locked in the iron. And that's what happened with Earth, which is an interesting point, which means that Earth's geomagnetic field that's locked in iron and nickel, etc., that points in the northerly direction, had to, when it was in the molten state, had to have had an external magnetic field for a long, extended period of time. And for that iron to solidify past the Curie temperature and become a permanent magnet. So where would that external magnetic field come from? Well, from plasma. And that external magnetic field had to come because of the solar wind and other conditions on planet Earth. But that's another story. It's just an interesting sideline that the magnetic field of Earth had to originate in a rich external magnetic field. And the idea that somehow this thing bounces up and down every whatever people say is also pretty ridiculous. The reality is the Earth's magnetic field changes constantly, and it actually flips probably every 2 weeks, probably more often in some cases if we have solar activity. But it's the plasma component of the magnetic field that flips. It turns south relative to the north magnetic field, the geomagnetic field, and you can actually see this on a compass, on a, like a Boy Scout compass for finding north. You set it on the table or take it outside during a geomagnetic storm, and you can see this thing moving around like crazy. So it's coupled the Earth's permanent magnetic field with the plasma magnetic field, which is included with the jet streams, the ionospheric jet streams, the jet streams that are lower in the atmosphere that drive our wind systems. Those jet streams, then the ionospheric jet streams, the Van Allen belts, and then there's another one outside of those. I talk about this in my books, the five-layer magnetic field model that I defined long, long time ago. Okay, so now let's go out and imagine a comet. Now, the Earth is discharging the solar capacitor, so there's a stream of electrons coming in on the nose side of Earth all the time. It's a streamer, a bundled streamer of electrons. It's constantly coming in to Earth. And typically what happens is because Earth has a magnetic field, these electrons bend. And so they really don't hit Earth. They bend one way and the protons go the other way, and that creates a cross planet battery. the positive charge on one side and the negative charge on the other side. And so this also, because that current is moving, it also helps support the magnetic field. So when I said there's an external magnetic field outside of the Van Allen belts, that's what I'm talking about. And that can compress, it can expand, depending on the solar wind conditions. And when it compresses, that is many times when we get the triggering of violent storms, cyclones, tornadoes, hurricanes down here at the troposphere where we live. Okay, but all of this is fine and good, but what happens when a comet, which has a much larger discharge of the solar capacitor, and the reason the comet does is because even though it might be smaller than the Earth physically, the nucleus of the comet could be much smaller than Earth, could be very small, but it's moving on an elliptical orbit, and that's the reason why it can create a much bigger discharge of the solar capacitor. Now, because the comet nucleus is charging up to a negative potential, it forms what is known as a Debye shield. A Debye, not the country Debye, Debye is a French name of a French scientist who discovered this phenomenon around charged objects. It's a shielding. And what happens is that around the negatively charged nucleus, there's a positive, basically a sphere of charged particles that form primarily hydrogen. But as you get in closer to the negatively charged nucleus, you get helium, you get deuterium, as you get closer, you might go all the way up to sulfur or other types of objects that are positively ionized in a sphere, nicely oriented sphere around the comet nucleus. And this shields the comet nucleus. So if you're outside of that Debye shield, which sometimes can be as much as a million miles across, and a million miles in the radius or the diameter can be a million, 2 million miles across. And so the distance, if you come inside of that Debye shield, in other words, if Earth magnetic field and all of the electrical magnetic components of Earth come inside of that Debye shielding, all of a sudden we have the potential to start electrically engaging in that comet nucleus, and all of the electricity, all of the electrical activity associated with that comet. And so now what happens to the Van Allen belts is interesting, because the Van Allen belts are constantly being fed by this electron stream that comes into the nose side of Earth. And that's, of course, something NASA doesn't know anything about. They don't know where these electrons come from, because in their model of the universe, there shouldn't be any electrons. How come there's electrons there? Well, that's because they're continually funneling in. And that gives Earth, by the way, a overall net negative charge, and Earth has a Debye shield around it. So that you can imagine these two globes with Earth in the center of one Debye shield and the comet with its Debye shield. And when those two Debye shields connect, when they rub together or connect, they don't really rub together, but I mean they physically overlap, let's just put it that way. Then all of a sudden, you have electrical connections between the more negatively charged comet nucleus and Earth. Now, the Van Allen belts are going to see that electric field, and they're going to be influenced by that and potentially create a storm-like activity in the Van Allen belts themselves, causing them to, in many cases, to drive up to much higher energies. So they become far more dangerous if you're in outer space. And also, they would tend to funnel in down towards the poles of Earth. And by the way, this is part of our electrical connection with the solar wind that causes the auroras. So when you're seeing the auroras, the charged particles from the solar wind have to come down through the magnetic loops, these loop currents of the Van Allen belts, and come down into the polar regions of Earth. And that's why you see the auroras in a ring around the North Pole and around the South Pole. But we know from listening to what the ancients talked about in the Velikovsky stories that, for example, when the large comet Venus passed by Mars, it lashed out with a snake-like plasma protrusion, and from a distance, it looked like take your hand, your right hand or your left hand, whatever. Take your hand and pretend you're grabbing a tennis ball, but keep your four fingers together, and then your thumb on the other side. And imagine there's a tennis ball in there. Now, looking at your arm, hold it out in front of your face, and you have your arm coming out with your hand there, your four fingers wrapped around the top side of the tennis ball and your thumb around the bottom of the tennis ball. And it looks like a snake's mouth, and it doesn't close all the way around the outside of the tennis ball, unless you're Dennis Rodman and have a hand that's, you know, giant, but my hand wouldn't go all the way around a tennis ball. So imagine that you have a hand that's, you know, no bigger than mine, would not go all the way around the tennis ball. And the view from a distance, that's what it would look like. And it would look like the planet Mars was caught in the mouth of a snake. And that's why they called it the serpent. Quetzalcoatl, the plumed serpent god of the night sky, who extracted the atmosphere and oceans from Mars. And NASA keeps jumping up and down looking for the oceans on Mars. Well, hey, buddy, they're not there. They were taken off a number of thousand years ago, and we have evidence of that. Mars has all the earmarkings of a planet that had oceans, had rivers. And I talk about this. I have a whole subpage in my picture of the day. Go to that subpage. There's the links that go along with this radio show. But go scroll way down in there, and I have a whole section on pictures of Mars, the surface of Mars, that shows the pristine rivers and waterbeds and erosion that would not be there after billions of years with all the tremendous annual dust storms that go on Mars. They simply wouldn't be there. So Mars lost its oceans recently. And when I started really pounding on this topic a couple of years ago, NASA came in and stole the whole concept, which they had never dealt with before, and claimed that Mars had all these oceans exactly like I had shown them. And then they go, oh, but billions of years ago. Billions of years ago. And now they're out sending satellites to Mars to find out what happened to the water that was there billions of years ago. Ludicrous. The water was there, the atmosphere was there, and the comet came by and basically ripped them off. And so, but that's what it would have looked like. And now imagine Earth being absconded or attacked, so to speak, electrically by a comet that is large as Venus. The planet Venus was the nucleus. And a massive, massive giant comet, and imagine what Earth would look like at a distance, but also imagine what would happen to the Van Allen belts. The Van Allen belts simply wouldn't be there anymore. And the people on Earth, when the Venus event was going on, they talked about the tremendous auroras. In fact, I've talked about this, the Red Hand of Death in the stories of Egypt that they talked about. I like that movie. One of my favorite movies is the original Ten Commandments, and was in the 1950s, one of the, you know, mega pictures of the 1950s. But they had very good special effects, and one of them was the Pillar of Fire, where the comet was literally discharging down to the surface of the Earth, the pillar of fire that extended into the air and was right there where Moses was. I mean, they saw it. It was between Moses and the Pharaoh. But that movie has a super, super well-done depiction of the pillar of fire, and then also Red Hand of Death, which was like a infusion into the atmosphere. And what I've talked about this is both auroras and the potential for influx from Jupiter at the time because of the basically sulfur dioxide and also the poisoning, etc., that went on at that time with the red blood. Remember, the rivers turned blood. And that could be an indication of sulfur dioxide coming in as it streams into the atmosphere as the Earth's electrical connection connected around the region of Jupiter. But basically, the Van Allen belts in an exchange like that would cease to exist. And understand, too, that the Van Allen belts, much like the rings of Saturn, are very short-lived phenomenon. If you, for some reason, cut off that electron stream coming in from the solar side that's constantly feeding the Van Allen belts, then they would just cease to exist. And so the ultimate source of the Van Allen belts is that electron stream from the sunward side in the discharge of the solar capacitor that Earth is going through all the time. But of course, the scientists at NASA don't know anything about that, so they don't know where these electrons. Well, maybe we should call them magic electrons instead of Van Allen belts. We'll call them the NASA magic electrons. That, excuse me, it's late in the show. I'm getting punchy. But anyway, okay, so now you have an idea of a little bit better feel for what is what the Van Allen belts are all about, how they interact, and what would happen if a comet came in, a real comet, a plasma discharge comet, etc. And so I'm going to switch gears here just a little bit. The webpage sale is still up, the good pricing. I have not raised prices because of shipping. And I'm basically, there's some orders that are $20 more this year than last year just for shipping my expenses. And I thought, well, you know, I'll just leave the prices like that. I want to make sure you get good water filter products, the best water filter products out there, the JMCC, GF that take everything out all in one filter element. And remember that my paid cast is still up there, and that's ongoing. I'm now in the process of moving on into the next books. I'm doing lecture series on all of my books. I started with Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, and then continuing on through the series. So that'll take a bit of time, but it's something I wanted to do for a long time. And rounding out the books, because the books were written for all time, basically. And so the paid cast, $3.95 a month on the webpage there. And I hope everybody joins. Tell other people about it, because it's a benefit for me and a benefit for you. The paid casts, every week a different topic. Deep dive into esoteric scientific topics. And this is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.